it is really fundamentally un-American.
No more!
Front war!
No more!
Front war!
No more!
Front war!
No more!
This is the leader of the Congressional Black Caucus, U.S. Representative John Conyers, accepting this year's LaDain Award at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference last week in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
I see in this room such an incredibly beautiful, powerful, creative force for change, not just in America, but for the world, that I am very much inspired by just being here to be selected and to have the privilege to get to know as many of you as I can. I can tell you right now, in March of next year, I will be in Houston, Texas with many of you.
Yeah.
This is important work, and I'll be bringing as many people as I can from Washington with me.
And upon hearing those words from Congressman Conyers that he and his friends will be coming to Houston made me feel very much inspirited as well. Tonight's show, though broadcasting from the Gulag City, was mostly produced in New Jersey. I have many of the great voices of reform for you tonight. I hope you'll stay with us on this special edition of Cultural Baggage. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. And my hat is off to the Drug Policy Alliance.
Basically, the idea is to change political consciousness in this country so that our children, hopefully our children and certainly our grandchildren, look back on the drug wars of the last few decades and of today with the same sort of distaste and contempt and even horror that we look back today on the Jim Crow laws and the slavery in our own nation's history.
Ethan Nadelman, Executive Director, Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org. It was with some fear and trepidation that I made the trip to New Jersey, never having been that far northeast. But I want to tell you, it was a wonderful event. I had the chance to meet many of my heroes within the reform movement, and one of them, Officer Brian Paddock of the London Police Department, was there, and he suffered the gratitude and the attitude from having been very instrumental in bringing about the change in the British marijuana laws. But he was demonized for his efforts and for the fact that he is an openly gay police officer.
I was in charge of a precinct in London with about 1,000 police officers under my command. And we were having real problems. We had high levels of street robbery, high levels of burglary. We had drug dealers shooting each other. We had high levels of crack cocaine and heroin being openly dealt on the street. So I decided that we needed to change the rule book, and we needed to introduce a system that allowed police officers to seize small amounts of marijuana and give a warning to the individual on the street and no further action taken against them. Well, for the first 6 months, everything went well. And then some conservative elements within the police force itself decided that this wasn't a good idea, and a senior officer at Scotland Yard wrote an article where he said that he expected drugs tourists, people coming from other parts of London, into my area because we were more relaxed about marijuana. I mean, my view, which I openly shared with the world on an internet website called urban75.com, was that drug addicts, those people who are actually addicted to these drugs, which is a very tiny proportion of those that take illegal drugs anyway, but those who are addicted should be treated as victims of crime, not perpetrators of crime. At the end of the day, they need medical help. They need medical intervention. They don't need prison. I mean, there are stories in the UK, and I hear it's more or less the same in the US, where you get people going into prison who are not addicted to anything, and they come out heroin addicts. even though, I mean, from the description I gave to you of the precinct I was in charge of in London, where you had crack cocaine and heroin being openly dealt on the streets, when I went and saw the governor of the local prison, because we had a prison inside the precinct, he said that drugs were more readily available inside the prison than they were on the streets. Now, you know, if people think that locking people up, drug addicts, locking drug addicts up, or even locking other people up who are not addicts but are caught in possession of small amounts of drugs, and putting them in prison is going to be a safe place for them to come off drugs, then that's not the reality. Locking people up for possession of small amounts of drugs does nobody any good at all, and it costs the taxpayer thousands and thousands of dollars.
Officer Brian Paddock will be our guest for a full half-hour cultural baggage during the holiday season. Next up, let's hear from another Brit, Officer Edward Ellison, former director of the Drugs Task Force for Scotland Yard.
Worked on smuggling at Heathrow Airport and then on major distribution in London, and followed it up later on by being the operational head of the drug squad in London at Scotland Yard. There's a total difference between the English and the American approach to all this. In England, we kind of look at what we're trying to achieve, and we're trying to achieve a reduction in the problems and the dangers that drugs cause. We're not in the problem of trying to look at any section of the community, or not trying to eradicate drugs, we're trying to reduce the problem that drugs cause. Well, I've got a problem. I'm over here with an organisation called LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prosecution. I have a very real problem, because I don't consider I'm a law enforcer. I consider I'm a policeman. And for me, 90% of the time in the police service is working with the community, trying to deliver what they want, working out what sort of policing they want, working on the service side, be it traffic, schools, children, advice, everything like that. And I only have recourse to law enforcement when all that fails. Law enforcement is an admission to me that everything else, proper policing, has failed. There's a big difference between the bottom end, where the person's a user, and I have never, I can never, and I will never see a user as committing a crime simply by the use of the drug.
The next voice you hear will be another member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, retired police captain Peter Crist.
Tell us what you guys are really wanting to do.
Well, the name of our organization is LEAP, which stands for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. So we take the issue to the crux of the issue, which is America's drug policy, which is a policy of prohibition. In fact, when I do presentations to audiences, what I like to tell them is, if they get nothing else from my presentation, when they leave my presentation, they should not be using the word prohibition as a historical reference any longer, but use prohibition as a statement of the times we live in today in America. And we from law enforcement come together as a group in LEAP to speak about the inadequacy and, in fact, the harm that a prohibitionistic policy causes in America today. And that goes far beyond marijuana and any particular drug. It's the policy that drives the whole thing that we are really addressing at LEAP.
For our last Law Enforcement Against Prohibition spokesman for this show, here is the director, retired officer Jack Cole.
Jack, we have scheduled in March an event in Houston. It's called Breaking the Chains, put together by the Drug Policy Alliance. And we're going to be bringing in congressmen and representatives from around the world to try to bring common sense to the drug policy of Houston, Texas, because we have shown that justice is broken here. And I'm hoping that you or some of your representatives can come down and be part of that. But your thought in that regard?
Well, I'm hoping that I can come down and be part of that, too, because the first series of drug policy conferences where the Drug Policy Alliance is actually going out and trying to bring in people of color in mass groups and trying to get them moving on this and educate them to what's really happening. And these groups are the people that really need to know about the truth about the drug war, because it's destroying their populations, literally destroying their populations. When I was in the state police, New Jersey State Police, by the way, New Jersey State Police is pretty well known for a few things.
Racial profiling?
Yeah. If we didn't create racial profiling, we at least raised it to the level of a high art form. And then we took our best racial profilers and brought them down to division headquarters, brought them in from the toll roads and the interstates. And we made one unit of them called the Interdiction Unit. And thanks to funding from the DEA's Operation Pipeline, we sent them around as a unit to educate police departments across the entire United States to do exactly what we were doing. What we're doing out there to people of color is horrible. You know, according to the Federal Household Survey, 72% of all people involved in the drug culture, users, dealers, whatever, are white. Only 13.5% of those folks are black. But of the 13.5% who are black that are involved in the drug culture, if you look at the arrest statistics, you find that 37% of all the people arrested in this country for drug violations are black. 42% of all the people in federal prison for drug violations are black. 60% of all the people in state prisons for drug violations are black. You don't have to
hide anymore. For years, I hid my suspicions. For years, I hid my activism. I want to tell you something, folks. It feels pretty good to be hanging out with the likes of U.S. Representative John Conyers and know that he is on the same side. We will win this war soon. The sooner the better, and as soon as you get involved, the end of prohibition draws ever near. I think Ethan and his crew were pretty smart when they brought this conference to the Sheraton there in East Rutherford. It's about a $15 cab ride to the nearest 7-Eleven. So many of the attendees would gather in the evening and share additional ideas well beyond the hours stated for the convention. And as always, noted author Daniel Forbes was delving deep and finding the news.
A big focus for DPA was their release Thursday of a report on the appalling and wildly expensive prison conditions here in New Jersey.
John Conyers, the DPA is going to come to Houston to bring with them, I think, many other congressional leaders, etc., to try to change things in what I call the Gulag City. And I guess the point I was wanting to address to you, what does this mean when you get leaders of the Congressional Black Caucus coming to a city because of their corrupt system?
You've broken enough eggs, make yourself a darn nice omelet. I mean, look at the legislative reform that Will Harrell of the ACLU has been a leader in effecting there in the state of Texas. And you know, things are darkest before the dawn, etc. It seems that maybe there's some real movement possible in Texas.
I also got a chance to speak with longtime High Times reporter Steve Wozniak about the DPA conference.
Western Europe is, you know, moving towards harm reduction and decriminalization of pot, but in Eastern Europe, there's, you know, rising heroin use and spread of AIDS. Without a lot of cooperation from the government for harm reduction policies. And there's a movement growing in the United States, but the Bush administration with Ashcroft as Attorney General and John Walters as drug czar is totally fanatical and is the 800-pound gorilla throwing its weight around the world to try to hinder the adoption of anything other than fanatically prohibitionist policies.
While I was up there in New Jersey, I heard the stories coming out that the cops had rampaged a high school, forcing the students down on the floor with guns and searching for drugs, and yet no drugs were found, as if the possession of a couple of bags of anything could justify endangering our children in such a way. And I thought once again, what the hell's going on? So I put together a little news report in that regard, and we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to play that for you.
Marijuana may not cause the overdose deaths like heroin, but it's just as dangerous.
That quote is from the former administrator of the DEA, now Deputy Director of Homeland Security, Asa Hutchison. Did you know that Asa means hemp in Japanese? Did you know that up until 1943, marijuana was listed in the U.S. Pharmacopoeia as a great cure for migraines? It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Nausea, vomiting, numbness in the face, chest pain, faintness, irregular heartbeat, palpitations, seizures, convulsions, tingling, and pain. Time's up. Another FDA-approved product. Imitrex, for migraine headaches at only $19 per tab. The White House Drug Czar's policies ensure that marijuana dealers stay in business.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
The White House Drug Czar's policies ensure that teenagers have easy access to marijuana.
Thank you, Mr. Drug Czar.
There is a better way. Bring marijuana in off the streets, tax it, regulate it. Contact the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of DrugSense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
I'm hungry.
Okay, we're back. I want to go ahead and run that report that discusses the situation where 14 cops came in with guns at the ready and threw 100 students on the ground. The commando-style raid has parents questioning the wisdom of police tactics. Here is the response from the Goose Creek, South Carolina Police Department.
I don't think it was an overreaction. I believe it was one method, one tactical method by which we could safely approach the problem to ensure that everyone was safe.
Daryl Rogers, the National Director for Students for Sensible Drug Policy.
Cops barging into a high school with guns drawn. I believe there was 14 police officers. Students were forced to lay face down on the hall floors. There were police dogs present, and all this was caught on high school security surveillance cameras. And these black and white images of police officers with guns drawn, some of which these weapons were close to students themselves, it was incredibly violent. It was disturbing and has no place in our high schools in the United States. But, you know, when you're a high school student and it's 7 o'clock in the morning and you're making your way off to homeroom and an officer has their gun unholstered, whether it's down or near you, it is a violation of everything that a school is supposed to be. It is a violation of what students should face on an everyday basis. Where police officers are supposed to make students feel safe. They found no weapons. They found no drugs. They found no drug paraphernalia. They found nothing to indicate that any illegal activity was taking place. The images that we all saw, that the nation saw, clearly depict officers that were brutalizing, terrorizing, and absolutely scaring the living hell out of high school students, innocent high school students.
Stratford High School principal George McCracken.
And I'll utilize whatever forces that I deem necessary to keep this campus safe and clean.
Another member of LEAP, Howard Wooldridge.
Well, this is incredibly inappropriate behavior on the part of police to draw their guns in a situation which there was no need to, by anyone's definition. This, I think, is again part of the desperation of people like the principal of that particular high school who wants to make this incredible impression. And hopefully he will create a backlash as people saying, if this is what the drug war is all about, then I don't want any part of it. As a police officer, retired police officer, I'm simply embarrassed once again by my colleagues who are still out there in blue just hurting themselves, hurting our profession, and being an embarrassment to law enforcement.
Before we get back to the voices from the conference, I wanted to present one more news story, and that's the fact that in Great Britain, their Multiple Sclerosis Society has determined that cannabis is a bona fide medicine for MS. I occasionally run into stories that indicate that marijuana helps to shrink cancer tumors or prevent brain swelling, and I've seen plenty of prior stories about its use for those suffering with MS. I try not to belabor the points to give false hope. But this, my friends, is astounding. From the independent newspapers out of Great Britain, world's biggest MS trial shows benefits of cannabis. Results from the world's largest study into the medical effects of cannabis have shown that the drug can reduce pain and improve the lives of people with multiple sclerosis. Scientists concluded that patients for whom other treatments have failed should be given cannabis derivative. The 3-year study, published in the world-renowned Lancet, is the first clinical appraisal of whether cannabis-derived drugs can help treat MS. Mike Donovan, chief executive of the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Great Britain, said, quote, "These improvements to quality of life can make a significant difference to people with MS. On the evidence now available, the MS Society believes that those who might benefit should be able to have treatment prescribed on their national health services. Patients say that smoking the drug reduces symptoms such as muscle stiffness and tremors and gives them greater mobility, which appear to soothe pain and alleviate muscle stiffness. I think every MS patient and their family in the United States should contact our drug czar, John Walters, and ask why, after having read this same report from Great Britain, he would make the following statement.
Well, there's no question. Some people who are sick and smoke marijuana feel better. They would feel better if they took crack. They'd feel better if they had a hit of heroin. The issue is not feeling. The question is one of efficacy and safety.
And be sure and ask him where they're stacking all the dead bodies of the marijuana users. Okay, so let's get back to the Drug Policy Alliance conference in New Jersey. One of the hits of the conference was the crazy Canadians. And here's one of them, Canadian Senator Pierre-Claude Nolan. No offense, my friend.
I don't agree that decriminalization is the proper way to go. I think we cannot kid people. We have to promote responsible use of any type of substance. And it's not by decriminalizing that we will achieve something. A little bit story around that bill. One of the writer of that bill, a bureaucrat within the Justice Department in Ottawa, gave an interview to the Rolling Stones magazine recently. And he basically said, look, we did that to give enforcers, police force, an easier tool to apply. So basically what they want, it's more incarceration, more arrest, more imprisonment. So I cannot support. The courts have decided that cannabis was not an harmful substance when it's used reasonably and responsibly. So they've decided to acquit those who are accused of possession. They continue to be tough on trafficking, but when you look only at possession of small quantity, they don't care. The Supreme Court of Canada have agreed, and they've already heard the arguments of three cases dealing with small quantity for recreational use of cannabis. In the Senate report, we've argued that to trigger the use of the penal law, there should be a significant harm cause to individuals.
Another of the crazy Canadians was Vancouver Mayor Larry Campbell. And I want to tell you, he's very articulate, intelligent, and just plain damn funny. He's going to be our guest sometime at the beginning of next year. And as a side note, while in New Jersey, he became a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. At these conferences, I'm always blown away because I get to meet my heroes, like the noted author, Dr. John Morgan.
People in the drug policy field know me as the co-author of Marijuana Myths, Marijuana Facts, a book which Lynn Zimmer and I wrote and published in 1997, in which we tried to examine a number of claims about marijuana and evaluate the conflicting scientific literature about it.
Tell us about some of the findings you were able to present in that book, sir.
Well, it's very interesting that we just confirmed what most presidential commissions and serious writers have said about marijuana before. Clearly, it's not an entirely safe drug. There is no such thing as an entirely safe drug. But that the dangers are, while not, I don't want to use the word minimal, but the drug has a wide safety margin. And many of the claims that it's particularly likely to cause lung damage and cancer and harm the immune system and harm your drive to work and lead you to other drugs, there's no scientific justification for any of that. Those are rhetorical devices, particularly in the mouths of government officials who want to continue the current policy of marijuana prohibition and think they can justify that prohibition by spurious claims of the drug's dangers.
I'm aware that in many other nations around the world, Great Britain, Canada come to mind, the government officials are starting to see the spurious nature of some of these claims. What is holding us back in the U.S.?
There's an enormous passion for prohibition in the United States. I'm always reminded when asked this question of a song by a country band in 1930, which went, "Prohibition is a failure, but we like it." And we like prohibition in the United States. It gives lots of people its jobs. It gives them their jobs and their prestige. It gives people a sense that I'm doing the right thing and fighting a moral battle, even maybe I'm losing. So we tend to adapt crusades in the United States, and this has been a long one, and we're loath to give it up, even in the light of, as you said, the Canadians moving perilously close to complete decriminalization. Britain has recently rewritten its code, so it's one of the lowest criminal offenses. The Dutch, of course, sell marijuana to individuals older than 18 in coffee shops. The rest of the world has moved to a logical, rational approach to this drug, while in the United States, we love prohibition.
We want to remind those out there on the Voodoo Patrol, you know what to do. So as we begin to wrap things up, I want to thank Ethan and Ruth and Julie and all the fine folks at DPA that made it such a fine event. And now I want to present this week's Drug War Hero of the Week.
November the 2nd, 2004. Is not just going to tell you what direction the drug policy is going to go in America. It's going to determine which way America is going to go with everything.
Our Drug War Hero of the Week, U.S. Representative John Conyers. I invite you to join us again next week here on Cultural Baggage when our guest will be retired Florida judge Eleanor Shockett, another member of law enforcement against prohibition.
I've been made very much aware of the number and the diverse groups of people who have recognized the dangers of our present drug policy and are making educated, informed decision to work for the repeal of our current drug laws.
To help close out today's show, here is the coordinator for the upcoming Breaking the Chains Conference, Ms. Deborah Small.
Well, the conference is scheduled to take place on March 4th through 6, 2004, and it'll be held on the campus of Texas Southern University here in Houston with a separate youth event on Saturday, March the 6th at the Shape Community Center.
It is my hope that many of the listeners all up and down the Drug Truth Network will consider coming to Houston for these events. Now, if this is your first time to listen to Cultural Baggage, I want you to know that we have about 40 other shows online, and they're at cultural-baggage.com. There we have many hours of stored interviews with doctors, scientists, lawyers, judges, Nobel Prize winners, and many more. And if you have some ideas on who we can bring on as a guest, please send me an email to dean@unvarnishedtruth.org. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I want to remind you, you don't know what's in that bag, so please, be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston,